Thompson. I'm one of the two directors of the Stanford Institute for the Environment. My co-director, Jeff Casa. Stanford Institute for the Environment is a brand new center at Stanford University designed to try to find working solutions to the environmental challenges that we face worldwide. And we're focused on four principal issues. One, oceans. Two, sustainable land use. Three, freshwater resources, and the fourth is energy and global climate systems influences what is going to happen in all four of those areas, simply emphasizing how important the California Coastal Commission is to the environment of California and to the sustainability of our globe as a whole. I'm going to hand it over to Meg Caldwell, one of my colleagues.
Thank you, Buzz. All of the people here this evening were involved in either the formation of the Coastal Commission, the writing of the Coastal Act, the passage of the Coastal Act, or the passage of Prop 20. Peter Douglas actually was one of the original coastal heroes, too. And it's just by virtue of the fact that Peter is still at the Coastal Commission. He started at the commission in 1977. He co-authored Proposition 20. He co-authored the Coastal Act. He is the third executive director of the Coastal Commission and has been in that position since 1985. He'll get me back later for that one. All right. It's my real pleasure and honor to have Paul Rogers with us this evening to help structure our discussion. Paul, as you probably already know, is an environmental reporter with the San Jose Mercury News. He was part of a team who won the Pulitzer Prize from the reportage of the Loma Prieta earthquake in 1990 and has been stacking up national and state honors since then. So, Paul, I'd like to hand it over to you.
Thanks very much, Meg. Can people hear okay? Okay. It wasn't long ago that one of our guests here tonight, Michael Fisher, wrote a little essay on the website of the California Coastal Trail. He said, on the San Mateo coastline, just over the ridge, less than an hour's drive from more than 6 million people in the San Francisco Bay Area, mile after mile, beach after beach, cove after cove, ridge after ridge, estuary after estuary, all are free from the cluttered, sterile, suburban sprawl that characterizes so much of populated California. It is a miracle, but a miracle that has required dedicated hard work from Coastal Commission officials and environmental leaders and enlightened property owners. The miracle didn't happen by accident, he wrote. And I think all of us would agree here that it didn't happen by accident. It happened because of the dedicated hard work of a lot of people, including many of the folks who are here with us tonight who helped pass Prop 20 in 1972, creating the Coastal Commission, and then the Coastal Act in 1976, making it permanent. I'll start first with Mel Lane over here to my right. Mel is widely recognized for his leadership in environmental conservation. He was a graduate of this fine institution, Stanford, in 1945, with a degree in economics. He and his brother Bill then worked full-time in the family business as publishers of Sunset Magazine from the 1960s to 1990. As many of you know, he served as the first chair of the California Coastal Commission and the San Francisco Bay Conservation and Development Commission. And he's been a trustee of Stanford University, as well as a board member of the Peninsula Open Space Trust, the World Wildlife Fund, the Monterey Aquarium Foundation. In 1998, he was named Conservationist of the Year by the California League of Conservation Voters. Mel and his brother Bill are also respected philanthropists, as many of you know, and their generosity to Stanford and many environmental groups have made California and the world a much better place. So, Mel Lane, ladies and gentlemen. Next, we have Jerry Smith. Following graduation from Santa Clara Law School, Jerry spent more than 30 professional years as a major force in Northern California's legal and legislative worlds. As a young attorney, he served as a Saratoga City Councilman and mayor of that city from 1968 to 1974. Afterward, he was elected to the state senate, where he represented Western Santa Clara County from 1974 to 1979. He was a key committee chairman and co-author of the 1976 Coastal Act, and he served as a judge for 17 years. He's also something of a sculptor, Jerry Smith. Next, we have Michael Fisher to my immediate right here. He graduated with a degree in political science from Santa Clara University and then earned a master's of city and regional planning from UC Berkeley in 1967. I probably shouldn't have mentioned that here at Stanford. He went to the other school. Afterwards, he became associate director of SPUR, the San Francisco Planning and Urban Research Association. Michael helped coordinate environmental groups' support for early coastal legislation and Prop 20, and he became executive director of the Regional Coastal Commission from 1973 to 76, then chief deputy director for planning under Jerry Brown. He was the second executive director of the Coastal Commission from 1978 to 85, and national director, executive director of the Sierra Club from 1987 to 93. Michael also served as executive officer of the Coastal Conservancy in the mid-90s, and most recently worked giving away lots of money to good causes as environmental program officer at the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation. Michael Fisher. Next, we have Ellen Stern Harris. Ellen is sometimes referred to as the mother of the Coastal Act. She hosted a meeting at her kitchen table in her Los Angeles home in 1971, following several years of the legislature not getting a bill through. Ms. Harris is the founder and executive director of the Fund for the Environment, a Los Angeles environmental group, and has been prominently involved in water quality and coastal protection issues for many years. After the passage of Prop 20, which she and others worked so hard to get through, she served as vice chair of the Coastal Commission during its first 4 years, and also has served on the Los Angeles Regional Water Quality Control Board. She's taught public policy at UCLA. She wrote a consumer affairs column for the Los Angeles Times for 7 years. Ellen Stern Harris. Next, we have Joe Bodovitz. Joe is a former reporter for the San Francisco Examiner, another ink-stained wretch among us. He covered planning and development for that newspaper and then left the paper to join SPUR, the San Francisco Planning and Urban Research Association, as associate director from 1962 to 65. Afterward, he became the first executive director of BCDC and then the first executive director of the Coastal Commission, which he led from 1973 to 78. After that, Joe was executive director of the PUC and founded the California Environmental Trust. Joe Bodovitz. And finally, we have Ellen Cerotti. Ellen graduated from this august institution in 1952 with a degree in economics. After he earned a law degree from USC, Allen worked for the Lieutenant Governor's office, then ran for public office himself, and was elected to the State Assembly in 1966, representing West Los Angeles. After serving 11 years as an assemblyman, Allen was elected to the California State Senate, where he served from 1977 to 82. He represented Beverly Hills in the legislature for 16 years. He was a leader there in education, art, and the environment. He also pushed for early coastal protection legislation and then was a co-author of the Coastal Act of 1976. Ellen Cerotti. Well, why don't we get started looking at where we came from? I'm curious, asking folks if they could describe a little bit the tenor of the times in the late 60s and early 1970s in terms of the coast. Reminisce a little bit on what kind of threats you remember the coast facing and why you think a coastal commission was needed in the first place. What do you remember being scared of back then?
You couldn't see the coast. We were driving along Malibu, and my children noted they couldn't find the ocean, and we were going for miles. And so I was sitting on the Regional Water Quality Control Board at the time, and I was thinking every time we approved a pipe for an outflow, it meant another scenic beach, another recreational beach was gone, and we needed to do something about it. So I got people like Bill Cordham and Don May, Larry Moss, George Wagner, Dale Secord, Laurel Long, Dick Ball, all of them Southern Californians who were very concerned, and Alan and Peter, and we sat around my dining table in Beverly Hills. This is a Beverly Hills inland movement. That there was support. We felt we could move ahead. Then we didn't have Xerox, we didn't have email, so what we did was have confidential drafts that we would mail back and forth, and we'd scribble in them. And Dick Ball, who was at RAND at the time and on the executive committee of the local Sierra Club, would, you know, integrate all of this and send it back and forth. It was a marvelous, marvelous experience, and probably it was one of the last of two initiatives that passed without paid signature gatherers. So my prayer is the future of this commission will go toward public financing. And thank you very much.
Other folks, what threats do you remember the coast facing back then?
Well, Bill Cordham watched the Sea Ranch project up in northern Sonoma County take 10 miles of public beach and wall it off for rich folks. San Onofre Nuclear Power Plant, the Diablo Canyon Power Plant, the chain of high-rise condos, and people were seeing themselves becoming walled off, as you said, Ellen, from the coast. And the Prop 20 ad that lost the anti-Prop 20 vote, the pitch was, local government has failed. They're taking our coast away. And the big ad was, don't chain off the beach. Vote no on Prop 20. Well, the voters said, wait a minute. What's this? Don't lock up the beach. Don't let us go there. It's the development. So the no on Prop 20 campaign backfired on them. Mm-hmm. And the quandary was, local government has failed. But of all of the counties who voted in favor of Prop 20, it was only Los Angeles County and the Bay Area counties.
So most counties voted no on the coast?
Coastal counties voted no.
Many counties voted no. Joe, well, go ahead.
Well, the point I was going to make, actually, it passed in all counties until you got to the four northernmost in the state.
And the most rural. So some coastal counties said yes and some said no.
Yes, but the key point about that was the heavily populated, thought to be politically conservative, counties of Southern California were reacting to what Ellen was describing in ways that made them want to vote for Proposition 20. And I think the two stunning facts were, despite all the money spent against it, it passed 55% to 45%, and that it passed in the most conservative parts of coastal California. Now, the northern part, of course, was and is politically conservative,
yeah,
too.
But,
I just have to tell you the best part. When we saw what was happening, the utilities doing these horrible lying commercials, we got Charlton Heston down to the 11th Commandment, went on and did a counter commercial in which he said, thou must vote yes on Proposition 20. That's how we won.
So he said, you can pry the coast from my cold dead face.
That's correct.
Yes, Joe.
It's a little hard to reconstruct all that, I think. But in addition, the utilities in those days believed firmly in nuclear power, the solution to all our problems. And there were proposals for nuclear power plants every, not every mile or two, but up and down the coast. And we were also going to use nuclear power to desalinate seawater. So, for example, Southern California Edison bought some land in Huntington Beach near the ocean for a nuclear power plant and desalination plant next to it. And so it wasn't only the walling off, it was the threats to come that I think people could perceive.
The Bodega Head was
Bodega Head, excuse me.
Let's get some of our legislators in here. Why did we need an initiative rather than a bill passed by the legislature?
that's a question that answers itself. Well, I think that, first of all, I think that Alan should speak to this because he was there at the very beginning and knows the history.
The gentleman is yielding the floor
now. Okay, thank you, Senator. My recollection of the history of the Coastal Commission is a little bit different from what you've heard, which is failure of memory by some of us, maybe mine. So let me give you the way I remember it. It's hard to think about this, but Bill Korda, who is here today, was the guy who started this whole thing.
It's his fault.
And no one had ever thought, well, maybe Ellen Harris did, but no one ever thought this would result in a coastal commission. Because what Bill Korda was talking about was a sea ranch in northern Sonoma County, which cut off 10 miles of public access to the beaches. Beautiful development, beautiful homes architecturally, just lovely. But the public who didn't own a house there couldn't get in. And Bill brought this to the attention of Assemblyman John Dunlap, who couldn't be here today. And Assemblyman John Dunlap put a bill in, or a resolution, or told Ed Zeeberg, who was the chairman of the Natural Resources Committee on which John and I sat, something is wrong up here, we've got to do something about this. So Ed Zeeberg loved to fly, so he said, I'll fly over there, and we'll all fly over to northern Sonoma County and take a look at the sea ranch, because they had an airport on the grounds. So we flew into the development there and spent a couple of hours looking around and seeing what this was and so forth. But I want you to understand, this started because of the sea ranch in northern Sonoma County. And Bill Korda, who was wise enough to bring this to the attention of the legislature and who felt there was something wrong in cutting off access to the ocean. So the history of the Coastal Commission Act, one of the main objectives was to provide access to the ocean for the public. And that is still one of the principal things that we're concerned about. It was 30, 40 years ago, it is today, and will be even more so in the future. So keep that in mind as you think about these issues. Now, Bill Korda brought this to our attention, and John Dunlap and I talked about it, and I put a bill in to do something about Sonoma County.
What year would that have been?
That was about 1968, 69. And then Ellen Harris, who was really the one who was thinking in big terms, said, well, what are you doing just for Sonoma County? Why don't you think about the entire coast of California? And I said, well, you're right, you know. We have to think a little bit in broader terms. So the next year, we put a bill in to develop a coastal commission. Now, that was based upon the San Francisco Bay Conservation and Development Commission, which had been established previously to try to stop the filling of San Francisco Bay, because every community along the bay had its own program, and everyone would fill it up, and pretty soon there wasn't going to be any water left. So based upon that, we tried to establish a commission that covered the whole state of California with all the interest. Well, I mean, you'd have 150 members of the commission. We knew that wouldn't work. So we had to try to think this thing through. Now, I want to I want to pay particular attention to John Dunlap, who isn't here today, and Ed Zeeberg, who was the chairman of our committee, who has died. But they, all through this process, they were people who kept pushing us and kept working with us. And Ellen Harris, and Peter Douglas, and others who are here today, who were a part of this process.
Now, there, on these bills, there were a couple of bills, right, in 1970 that weren't successful. What was the problem in the legislature? What was the main reason they couldn't get through?
Well,
who were the main opponents? I can imagine, but who were the main opponents?
Who were the main opponents? The main opponents were the wealthiest people in the working in the legislature, the oil companies, the big builders, the many of the cities and counties didn't like it because we were taking away power from them, and there was a
big
lot of opposition here.
Yeah, now, big labor too.
Labor, you're right.
Yes,
labor
why did labor oppose?
They'd be happy to build a crematorium on your beach.
I guess that's the yellow line. That's the yellow line.
I wish I had used that argument. I presented the bill.
Jerry,
but
I think
that Alan gets ready to go on. I mean, I really feel that labor was sincere in their objections, as they often are, about the idea of jobs, and yet the argument that we tried to appeal to them about was that it's your members that are going to use the beach.
Of course, yeah.
And at those days, I don't know if the saying was accurate, but we used it a lot, was that 75% of Californians live within an hour's drive of the beach. And when you can't, from Zuma to Malibu, you can't get access, can't park your car, then I think it was dramatic.
Yeah.
And that started to erode away, but this is labor, that started to erode away the labor objections.
Well, may I just amend the plan? It wasn't just VCDC, which was a key and critical concept. But having served on the Regional Water Quality Control Board, I felt people needed a regional commission they could get to. Only lobbyists can afford to fly to Sacramento or whatever. So we had...
One would travel up and down.
That's
the state.
Right. We had regional ones, and they cleared a lot of stuff, and then we were the appeal board, just like the State Water Resources Control Board was the planning agency and the appeal board. And that was part of it, besides the excellent basis of the
Now let me get Mel in here. Mel, what do you remember about that time in the late 60s and early 70s with the politics and the tenor of what was going on the coast?
Well, like, although he was very concerned about the amount of development and where it was going, I did not get heavily involved in getting Prop 20 passed. When the commission was formed, was a planning body as much as it was a permit granting world, and the permit thing was a pain in the neck.
It still is.
Planning was even a bigger part, and it didn't get any publicity out of it.
What do some of you remember as the darkest hour? I mean, did you all expect that it was going to pass, or what are your recollections of that campaign and going into Election Day, what you thought was going to happen?
Well, let me start on that. John Dunlap and I introduced the bill in that in 72, and we went up and down the coast having hearings and for the press and all this kind of thing. And when the bill didn't pass in 72, the group, I don't know what we called them in those days, but the people who were interested in the Coastal Act were ready to go to the initiative. Peter Douglas, who had drafted the bill that we introduced in the legislature, also drafted the initiative, which was, we secured the signatures on it, we went to the election in 1972. It was...
What about the Coastal Alliance?
Janet Adams really has to be remembered here too, because she was fantastic in leading the effort.
And Claire Dedrick, who just passed away a month or two ago.
That's right. And we went up and down the coast, and we talked to people, and we did everything we could to let people know that this was an important issue. And all many of you probably participated in that effort. And it passed. And you know, we didn't know whether it was going to pass or not, but it did.
What do others remember about election night or the days leading up to the election?
Well, again, with a reiteration of what Alan said, memories are wonderful things. but my recollection is that the day after Election Day, the Los Angeles Times front page had its screaming banner headline saying, Nixon wins by a landslide with 55.2% of the vote. And the lower right-hand corner of the same front page said, Coastal bill squeaks through with 55%.
That was digging pretty deep. I understand that there were some yes on Prop 20 folks who went out in the middle of the night and painted over some of these billboards that said, save the coast, vote no. Does anybody remember that?
No, I didn't know that.
Not to mention any names, but that was Warner Chabot.
Now, we've had a coastal commission now for 33 years, and I'm curious how folks think it has done. When you worked for the passage of Prop 20 and then for the Coastal Act in 1976, you had certain expectations. Has the Coastal Commission lived up to those expectations that you had? Maybe we'll start with Mel on that. Is this 35 years later, Mel, is this what you had hoped for?
I definitely think it has. We were darn lucky. It's a lot of hard work, though.
Yeah. So you're not disappointed about the way that things have turned out in any way, or excited that it came better than you anticipated? It's about what you thought?
We're all on fleet, but again, there's been lots of new battle there and there.
Yeah.
We're battling more right now.
What do others think? Is this what you had expected?
I'm deeply disappointed. The rich have inherited the coast. I can't afford to stay at the Montage. And they have, you know, just capitalized on this precious, gorgeous coast. And same with Torrey Pines, which is so beautiful. But the problem is, the intent when we set out to do this was to have affordable places for families to come from inland and spend a weekend, pensions, whatever, and we have not at all done that. And I am deeply disappointed. And as I told Mark Massar in Santa Barbara about 5 years ago, what we really need is a tsunami so we can start off
with a long warning period. So
this is 5 years ago. So then I wrote that in an op editorial for the LA Times, and it was published. And somebody from Malibu who lives there said, wrote in a letter to the editor, did you mean for us to stay?
Joe, what about your expectations on what you'd hope for and what you got? What do you think?
Well, I find myself seated here tonight between the mother of coastal legislation and the father of coastal legislation. So I speak as the bastard child. I disagree to some extent with Ellen about this. I think the problem was recognized from the beginning that preserving the coast meant not having hordes of people overrunning the coast, if that could be prevented. And I think commissions in the past and in the future struggle with that issue. And I feel badly that there's a Ritz-Carlton on the coast in Orange County. But if you had seen the plan and what would have been built without that Ritz-Carlton, it would have been gated communities as exist along other parts of the coast. And to me, it is better for society that some people can go there and many people given the turnover rather than a handful of people being able to lock up the coast. And there's a certain unfairness in our society, but if you go to Cambria, if you go to Bodega Head on a summer day, you will see people in trailers who come from Sacramento and Fresno to get out of the summer heat. Mm-hmm. And they've been doing it for a long time, and as far as I know, they will continue to do it. And whether it would be better if there were better accommodations for them, sure. I think a part of the question, too, is what if there had been no Coastal Commission? All of us can know what would have happened. So I don't think...
Well, sketch that out. What if there had been no Coastal Commission?
Well,
what would our coast look like?
Florida is the right answer. Each community would have had political pressure to maximize revenues and opportunities from its part of the coast and put in parking limited only to residents of City X, a continuing issue. When Proposition 20 was on the ballot, California had a population of 20 million people and a coastline of 1,100 miles. California today has a population of 36 million and growing, and a coastline of 1,100 miles. So you can't be surprised that the Coastal Commission is a battleground. I used to say that we had every urban issue to deal with except snow removal. So, put this another way, if you think there is a problem here, it's the problem that the coastal zone is attached to the rest of California.
Let me add one more thing to what Joe has talked about. You mentioned the Orange County hotel. It just so happens that I was invited to go to that hotel in Orange County, which is what is the
Laguna Niguel.
What is the name of the hotel?
Ritz-Carlton.
I was invited to stay there by a friend, and so we went there. And what really gave me pleasure was looking out the window and seeing right next to the hotel, there was a space for people to come and use the beach. And that would not have happened without the Coastal Commission. That is one of the important things that the Coastal Commission did, because Orange County didn't have that in mind. That was the Coastal Commission staff who insisted on that.
Now, Jerry, what are your thoughts in terms of when you helped write the Coastal Act in 1976, what you were hoping for, what you anticipated, and what we've ended up with? Is it better than you'd hoped for? Is it disappointing? Where are you?
Well, before I answer that, just let me share a Ritz-Carlton story. We have our own up here in Northern California.
Half Moon Bay. Yeah.
And I was there, I'll say as a guest or somebody else if I would. But no, I was there on my own hook. And it took great delight in seeing these signs that say public access and to see joggers and bike riders ride right along the fairways and the greens of the golf course, and they have the right of way, and that's the way it should be. So in that sense, I'm happy. And I agree with Joe that the economic factors here at play are gigantic, and the pressure on local government, having once been part of that, would be staggering. They wouldn't, and especially with tight money now. Yeah. State mandates and federal mandates coming down, they're looking for money as they do now, and they would look to the coast if they had a coastline to capitalize on. But all in all, I'm delighted, and I took just this quiet pleasure in seeing these joggers. This just happened a couple of weeks ago, jogging along that with these palisades. It's great,
Michael. I'm so delighted, Jerry, to hear you say that, because in addition to your work on co-sponsoring the coastal legislation, you also chaired the committee with oversight over the Coastal Commission and how it performed for several years. And I recall being called on your carpet once, or twice, or yes. But the one that got my attention that I'll never forget is
the
time.
The pine tree?
The time, well, I think it was a pine tree,
yeah.
But it was the time when you looked me in the eye, you slammed your hand on the desk and said, "Mike, even if you're right, you're wrong."
You'll be happy to hear that I've been meditating. I don't do things like that.
Jane tries to keep me from doing
it. Well, there was a period right after the passage, and I think you bore a lot of it, where the legislators were getting complaints, the people that had voted for it, and in my case carried the bill. And there were horror stories about a pine tree in Santa Cruz that was endless.
Thank heavens I've forgotten that.
Yeah, right.
Was the pine tree didn't come down? Or
it come down, and the guy wanted to replace it. And
to block a view.
Yeah, and we don't want to talk about that. But the point is that you really had to go through that period, like we all go through growth periods, and you couldn't look at those imperfections or slippages in your evaluation of the bill. The bill is a great bill.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, indeed, there was a significant shift, serious culture shift.
Yeah.
Property owners along the coast had been used to dealing with local governments. Local governments were used to recognizing that rural lands, farmlands, were going to become developed. So the rancher who got C Ranch developed, well, the next ranch down and the next ranch down, or Henry here in San Mateo County, the next property down, expected as part of the way things happened, that they would be able to use their property to retire or send their kids to college. And so here comes a coastal commission headquartered in San Francisco going to rural counties and saying to farmers, you bought a farm, you own a farm. That was heart-wrenching to not only the local governments but also the owners of the farms. So it wasn't a surprise, as Jerry is saying, that there was a rocky period where a number of us, myself included, got death threats. There were people who were really, whose lives were seriously changed by this. So here we are 30 years later. I'm assuming, Peter, that death threats aren't happening anymore.
Don't assume.
Things haven't changed.
But you know, one of the mottos that we had then, and I'm assuming you have now, is that for every permit granted, a resource partially lost. For every permit denied, decision delayed. Excuse me.
Yeah, Joe, go ahead.
I wanted to.
One quick point. We'll do another question or two here, and then we'll take some questions from the audience to wrap up. So
well,
go ahead, Joe.
We, in the chronology we're on, we've jumped over a key point that I would like to go back to, if I may. And that is, we jumped from election of 72 to how things are now.
Yeah.
And I think it's very important to note that how things are now was not an act of God or something that just happened. A lot of people worked very, very, very hard. When Proposition 20 passed, as some of you know and others may not, there were 6 regional commissions. There was a total of 84 commissioners plus staffs in 6 regional offices. And this whole operation had 3 years to prepare a plan. And the law was one way on November 2nd, and on January 1st, the law changed completely. And there was nobody around to give guidance as to what the new law meant. And there was a huge danger in the early days that this well-intended effort could collapse. And there were days when all of us had our doubts. And if there's one hero without whom none of this would really have happened, it's Mel Lane, who was the first chairman. That kept everybody on course, that set up, really, to me, enormously high standard of how to conduct fair hearings, reach decisions, get planning done on time. As it happens, I'm one of the few people in the room who know that today is Mel's birthday. So one final sentence on this topic. All of us who are sitting up here, all of you who are still on commissions, working on the staff, working in organizations to try to make the coast a better place, we're the ones who owe you thanks.
That's right.
You're here.
Absolutely. Mel had the most amazing way of dealing with each of the commissioners. It was simply marvelous. I'd sit next to him and I'd be shaking my head saying, I don't know, this is really tough. And he says, Ellen, all the good choices are gone. And then we would all have arguments on the commission. I was the only woman there, and when the men get bored, they send me notes. My room number is. Then I'd send back a note. I need a note for wife. But anyhow, we had a lot of fun. And after we were done fighting, we would all go out to dinner. And everybody was congenial because Mel set the tone. And I think that is such an important lesson for anybody working in any field of government, to have a congeniality about it. And I thank you, Mel, so much for that.
Thank you.
I'd like to before we get to questions, Senator Jerry Smith really has to be recognized for carrying the bill, which made into law the whole commission, because we only had 3 years under the initiative, and we had to get it through the legislature. And Jerry, I wonder whether you want to talk a little bit about, about how you did that.
Well, I was a freshman senator, and believe it or not, and I got a call one day in my office from a constituent who lived in Saratoga and said that the Caltrans is out here cutting down eucalyptus trees on Highway 9, you know, right around the Hacienda restaurant, if you know Highway 9. And I said, this is a very important problem. I'll put a bill in for you and we'll fix this. And the number was 1277. And the bill passed easily. Who was going to vote against that bill? Even in the Senate in those days, and went over to the Assembly. And Peter Douglas and his boss, Charlie Warren, who was really a factor and a player in environmental politics, was collecting bills. And I kept wondering why the bill never got to the floor of the assembly, but he had a little stack of them there. And as Peter explained before we walked in, when they chose, the major bill was being carried by Wilensohn in the Senate. And because a couple of senators didn't vote, they deliberately walked out. That bill died, and so they needed another bill, and they needed to dump a bill, the old Wilensohn bill, into this bill. It's a terrible tactic, but when you're desperate, you do all this anything. And hijacking, I think, is what it's called. And John Zero, I guess that's the person, said, you ought to pick 1277. First of all, that's the Smith bill. First of all, it does nothing. And the author can talk a good game or something like that. So that's how I got the bill. And so I really shouldn't be talking this much at all up here. But just to telescope this a bit, the carrying of the bill, we had a very brief time. We were under the gun. We had to do something that year. It had to be done that year by January. But really, we were going to go out of session in the middle of September. So we really had about a month and a half to get ready. I got ready, my staff. Peter Douglas was instrumental in getting, it was his bill, basically, and it was to get me ready. But at any rate, remember, I've only been there a year and a half, and I was walking through, and no one that's been there that short time usually carries a bill. I was walking through the Capitol one day after, 5:30, 6 o'clock, and Willie Brown was coming the other way, and I didn't know Willie very well at all. I think he was calling him Mr. Brown still. And he looked at me and he said, you're the luckiest son of a bitch in this building. And I was. And it just, by freak, got it, and, it was great. It was a great experience.
It passed by a narrow margin.
Well, it passed. you can let a bill, many of you know this probably, but can let it sit on file, as they say, when you haven't got the vote. So it can sit there for weeks. But George McMajan, who remember, raised his microphone almost every Thursday and asked me when I was going to take it up. And we only had, I can only remember getting about 19 The best count was 19, and we needed 21 votes. That was the best count, and that's counting, you know, guys that you see in the coffee shop and smile at you. So, what you have to remember is that, or I have to remember, is that this 1277 would not have passed but for six Republicans, who, and they were great Republicans, Nedgedly, Bear, and others. But I was looking at the square card before I came up here, and Jack Schrotti, he was from San Diego, voted for the bill. He must have been up for election that year, because that's a tough vote.
And what was the final vote?
Well, they got 23, but there were
23.
But it's, this is old war stories, but Alan won't remember all this stuff. When you get to 19, you know, everybody wants to be 20 and 21.
Yes, right.
And so there were, some of these people are still in politics. we're negotiating to be 20, 21. And Preble Stoltz, who was another person who wanted to be, Mark Poche, these were of the governor's office, Jerry Brown, and Jerry Brown himself. And we are also forgetting Leo McCarthy, who got it out of the assembly. Boom, like that. And but anyway, it was right down to the last vote, and the Capitol was being restored in those days, and they had Quonset huts out in the back, and we were sitting in those. That's where the chambers were, and there was a long ramp that came down toward the governor's office, and the governor's men, like Preble and Mark Poche, were like sharks. They would just wait for a senator to come along, one of these undecided, and they would grab it. And so they eventually got, they got to 23.
An hour before midnight?
We were late in the evening. We weren't midnight. We were late in the evening. Because we went out to dinner afterwards, I remember that. Yeah.
The last day, the
was
legislative
I think it was
session.
I don't think it was the last, I think, but we were close. We were close.
But to me, the most important thing about what's happened with the Coastal Protection Program in California is the moral compass, the ethical compass that was created by not only the authors, Alan, Jerry, and others who worked on this, but Mel Lane and Joe Botovitz and Mike Fisher. I mean, I'm the third executive director, but I follow in the footsteps of people whose ethics were impeccable and who said, our job is to do a public service job here, not worry about the politics, not worry about the money, but in the best interest of future generations. And that is an ethic that is carried through. And when people ask me, what is the most important accomplishment that you have achieved in your life at the Coastal Commission, I say, it's the staff that we've accumulated. It's the staff that's the best staff I can think of who are dedicated to public service, who are dedicated to doing what's best for the environment, and who've been inspired by the leadership of the people that you see sitting right here. That, to me, is the best, most important accomplishment that we have. And our commitment is to continue that forward.
May I just give an example of the jeopardy that remains very heavily embedded in my mind? We had an executive director who wrote a recommendation that was so eloquent, it was like poetry. It was about the beauty of San Onofre. And it was a cathedral. And
the coast has a powerful
and, this was the issue. The issue was, we were in our meeting when Edison brought on all of his hard hat people to picket us. And we did not cave. And I was so proud of our commission and of Joe's leadership and Mel's leadership and so forth. And the next thing we heard was that Edison was going to go to the legislature and see that our budget was chopped so heavily that we could never be effective again. And I was so upset that Mel realized how upset I was and flew down to try to ameliorate my very strong feelings with a bottle of wonderful Zinfandel. And then there was a meeting held in Santa Barbara, and remember, I was still the only woman there, and the men all convened in the men's room to decide what would be the fate of San Onofre. Do we lose the whole budget for the Coastal Commission, or do we build the San Onofre, or whatever? And I had not yet gotten to the point where I could walk into a men's room. I mean, I feel chicken, but what can you say? So only two of us, Richard Wilson and I, held out, and we were heartbroken, and I turned gray. So I just want you to know, you think I'm blonde.
Well, let me wrap up with one final question, then we'll go to the audience. There are a lot of people here who are going to be working on coastal issues for years to come, and I'm curious what advice each of you would have for younger people going forward who want to preserve the coast and who are interested in these issues. And maybe we'll just go right down the line. Alan, what would you tell?
Well, you're giving me an opportunity to say something else that I wanted to say, because Peter Douglas has been not only the spark plug of the commission over the last 20 years, I guess, but he has also been involved in recommending to other states in this country and to other countries around the world the importance of coastal legislation. So what we did in California not only has affected us here, but it has affected people throughout the world. I think this is really a fantastic thing that this commission is somewhat responsible for. And as far as I know, they say Oregon had a bill before we did, but I never looked at the Oregon bill. But but I think that California has been the state which has been the leader in this country and in the world in this area. And I think it's something that all of us can be very proud of.
And the advice for young folks?
Do I have any advice for young folks?
Who want to preserve the coast going
forward? Get involved. Get involved.
And clean money. That's the only thing that's going to stop the perpetual influence of the special interests. And even though we now have fixed terms, which is absolutely right, so people aren't dragged off the stage when they vote against a campaign contributor right at the moment, it's horrible. But it's not enough, because these same people want reappointment. And the reappointment means they've got to satisfy the campaign contributors to their appointing authority. So if we don't get clean money, kiss the coast goodbye.
Joe, your advice to younger folks?
Trying to solve the problem of public access at Malibu is a lifetime employment.
Michael?
Oh, gosh. The Coastal Commission really is an agency to be proud of. And so if you have an opportunity to join the company of present, past, and future Coastal Commission staffers or commissioners, take advantage of that opportunity. It's one that most young people will never have. So if you have it, make the most of it. Be true to yourself and be true to your colleagues and true to the law, which is a good matter.
Here, your advice for younger people who want to preserve the coast?
Well, just maybe a lesson from what we've talked about today. That it looked grim at various times. When Alan put the first bill in, and there was a big gap before the initiative, and then you've heard about the bill and the trouble it had. I would say, whether you're an advocate or you work for the staff, or whatever direction it takes, just don't give up. I mean, this is really tough stuff. This is not easy. And we've just given you little pieces of it. But it's not an easy task, but it's really rewarding.
Mill, your advice for young people who want to preserve the coast?
You get involved is the right one. And I guess myself, you kind of have to work at two or three levels at the same time and keep them all pulling together. And we also split between planning and permits.
keep a bottle of Zinfandel handy, right?
Yeah.
Very good. Yes.
On that note, actually, I think it is time to say thank you to our coastal heroes. And I know the ramp from the Coastal Commission down the hall is open. You can grab any one of our coastal heroes to ask them your own questions. But in the meantime, I wanted to just express our real gratitude to each of you for coming and being a part of this. And we have documented it, and I think this is going to be extraordinarily valuable for those of us who are working in this area, and to our to future commissioners and to staff members. If you would all join me in singing Happy Birthday tonight, I think that would be fabulous. Shall we?
Yes. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Mel. Happy birthday to you.
I invite you all to join us at the Coastal Commission meeting bright and early, 8 a.m. tomorrow morning. We will have a special workshop on desalination, and we'd love to see you there. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Ben.
Thank you for bringing us on.
Well, I understand how we're going to move the thing.